Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Drop Set, Episode 9. My name is Darren Starr. I will be your tour guide for the next, 46 minutes, I'm going to guess, if I put on my Swami hat. That's what I'm going to say is the duration here today. So good to have you here with us. Thanks for joining. If you are out there on Facebook land as well, thanks for watching. I appreciate it. Just like last week, I am doing a Facebook live broadcast as I record this as well, because nothing is more exciting than watching somebody talk into a microphone. I mean, Rush Limbaugh's made a living off that, right? So why not? So here we are. What is new this week? There's a whole lot of stuff going on. I feel like I'm just kind of treading water, trying to keep my head above water and not drown. Doing an okay job of it, but it feels like a never-ending struggle. So my wife, who is a teacher and an artist, she is in fact an art teacher, has a show this weekend, and she just kicked that off 90 minutes ago, and that's running tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. If you happen to be in Knoxville, you can stop by Web School. They have a bunch of artists with their work available. It's always fun to go and look through and check out what they have there. But been working a lot on helping her get some stuff put together for that. More band stuff, practice. We've got another show next week. I had a birthday yesterday, the big 4-0. I still remember when I made fun of my mom when she turned 40. And so I called home last night, and she was so kind to not bring that up to me about what a jackass little bratty kid I was. So thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. We got spring break coming up, and I never do anything for spring break, and this year is the exception. So we're going to pack up our bags and the dogs and go to Charleston for a few nights. So that will impact what I do for work on that week a little bit. So I need to keep my clients in the loop there. And then once I'm back from that, I will be starting a cut. So it is long overdue, and it's time for that. So my goal right now, you know, I'm kind of, you know, at the tail end, or, you know, a little past the tail end of this bulking phase, and it would make sense to start cutting now, but I don't want to cut and then head into spring break where I'm really not going to give a crap about my diet at all, just full disclosure. So I'll worry about that when I come back. So right now I'm just kind of trying to keep a little bit of the edge off, clean things up a little bit, get my mind right for it when it starts, and that'll be a good 3 or 4 months once we're back. So let's see. Let's do a little Q&A here. So this is not so much a question as just something that I thought was funny. So as I mentioned before, I get a lot of emails from clients, and some of them are working with coaches right now, and they're just kind of thinking like, man, I'm not sure this is really what I'm looking for, because, you know, they just keep giving me like thumbs up, good job every week, and they're not really helping me improve anything, and I don't really feel like I'm progressing the way that I should. And so I get a lot of emails like that from people, and I like to break it down. I'm like, you know, tell me a little bit about what you're doing for diet. I'm like, I don't care who you're working with. I don't need to see your plan or anything like that. Just give me the broad strokes. But invariably, they'll like send me their plan so I can look at it and see what they're doing. And it's always funny to see how things are presented by other coaches. So for me, I do everything in Microsoft Excel, because for me, it's all about the numbers. So the actual foods are really just built around the numbers. And so if I don't have the numbers present in there, it doesn't work for me in my OCD. it drives me crazy. So I'll get these plans from people, and it'll be spelled out like in a Word document. I did get a photo one time. Somebody said, this is my meal plan. And it was like handwritten on the back of a napkin. And I don't know if that was him writing it out or if it came from his coach or what, but I just thought it was funny. But I got one just a couple days ago that really made me laugh, because it had it all broken down. Like, you know, here's your daily macro totals, and then here's all the foods below. Congratulations, Facebook says. This is my most liked live video yet. Most liked of 2. Wow, I'm really breaking new ground here. This is awesome. So it had the macro breakdown at the top, and then it said, here's all your foods, but the individual foods and meals didn't have any macro breakdown or anything like that. So I don't know where those numbers were coming from. But it was funny, because it said something like, you know, your protein for the day is 171.4378 grams. I'm like, really? You're giving me my protein intake to the 10,000th of a gram? Really? You think you have that kind of accuracy? And so the question just revolves around macro accuracy and reading labels and understanding estimates and where those things come from. So you have a packaged food and it says, you know, the serving size is whatever, 100 grams, there's 2.5 servings in here, and here's the breakdown on protein, carbs, and fats per serving. So first of all, do you have exactly 250 grams in there? Probably not. I mean, look at a package of Uncle Ben's Ready Rice where it says there's two servings of, God, what is it? 120 grams a piece, so there should be 240 grams in there. Every single one of those fucking packages has 200 grams, not 240. I'm sorry. That is like the biggest pet peeve of mine in the world. I should start a letter writing campaign. It irritates me to no end, but I continue to buy their product because I am a sad human being and it's very convenient and I need it. So anyway, the point being, you know, they're all estimates. That's a bad estimate. But the macros are really just breakdowns on, like, you know, average, you know, per 100 grams, this is about what you can expect to find, you know, protein, carbs, and fat. It's not tremendously accurate. And you'll notice that most of those things don't even give you tenths of a gram. It doesn't say 10.1 grams per serving. I mean, some things do, and I question the accuracy of those tremendously. But if it says 10 grams, you figure, you know, it's probably somewhere between 9 and 11. If it says 30 grams of protein, it's probably somewhere between, you know, 28 and 32. That's good enough. That's a ballpark. You know, your serving size, if you do, you know, one level scoop of protein powder, okay, do you actually take a straight edge and level off the scoop? Do you pack it down? How tightly packed is that? Is that like vacuum packed or what? Because there's going to be void space in there. You know, I mean, it's all estimates. So when you see a meal plan that is spelled out and it gives you macros to the 10,000th of a gram, just take that with a big ass grain of salt. You know, does that mean it's inaccurate? No, it does mean that the person that wrote it doesn't understand statistical accuracy. So, which is not a requirement to write a meal plan, but it's a funny note nonetheless. So, I did want to address a bodybuilding myth this week. And this is, you know, it's not so much a myth as it's just something that people tend to think. And, you know, there may be a little bit of validity to it, but they don't necessarily understand why. And that has to do with meal timing and frequency. So, the main gist of this is, you know, it goes back to, you know, the old school bro science mentality that says, you know, you need to eat 6 small meals a day, blah, blah, blah. You need to have your pre-workout meal exactly here. You need to have your post-workout meal exactly here so you can hit your anabolic window, this, that, and the other thing. And boy, we should think about that less. Think more about what your day overall looks like and don't try to micromanage every little aspect of it. Like if you're, you know, 10 minutes late with a meal, oh God, the world's going to end. No, it's not. I've seen, you know, posts from other coaches. I think it was the one that sticks out to me was Matt Jensen, who said something to the effect of, you know, that the anabolic window is more like an anabolic barn door. You know, it's a big ass window. You've got some time where you can squeeze in that post-workout meal and just be fine. And that is absolutely correct. It really is. As far as pre-workout meal timing, you know, it kind of depends on what it is, how quickly it digests, how rapidly it's going to get absorbed into the bloodstream, and whether or not you're giving yourself carbs pre-workout. That certainly has an impact as well. If so, depending on what those carbs are, you need to give them time to be active and be ready so that you've got the, you know, so you've got them available as an energy source. So I typically, you know, I will eat, mull around a little bit, drive to the gym, warm up. By the time I start my workout, it's been about 45 minutes since I've eaten. Usually that works for me. Some people, they need to give themselves a little bit more time. And this comes down to the biggest factor is, you know, can you work out with stuff still in your stomach? Or if you start jumping around and doing all kinds of crap, is it going to slosh around and make you want to throw up? That's the biggest thing that should be helping you determine when your pre-workout meal should be. So something to consider there. The rest of the meal timing, you know, eat when you wake up, eat something when you go to bed, and just space everything else out in the middle. Figure out when your workout's going to be, and then decide when your pre-workout meal and your post-workout meal are going to be around that. There's a little window that you're going to hit there, and that block is going to slide around the day based on if your workout moves around. And then just fill in the gaps with the other meals here and there. The number of meals is largely irrelevant. What we want to get is manageable protein servings. So every meal should have a protein source. This is one of the guidelines that I give all my clients in a flexible dieting program. Every meal should have a protein source, so you're not just eating carbs, you're not just having a fat, but there's always protein in there so that you can get some protein synthesis going as well. So what you want to do is look at your overall daily protein requirement and divide that by some number, however many meals you want to eat, and then see on average about what your typical protein serving per meal is going to be. If you end up with something like 80 because you're supposed to hit 240 grams and you only want three meals, nah, I wouldn't do that. You know, I mean, you know, for if you're a guy, 40, 50, 60 is pretty manageable. If you're a woman, 25, 35, maybe 40, you know, that's pushing it a little bit, but that's, you know, that'd be fine too. Don't have, you know, 15 meals, so you're eating 10 grams of protein per meal, but don't eat three, so you've got to get 80. You know, as with everything, the truth lies somewhere in the middle, and a middle of the road, more moderate approach is definitely going to be more productive. So that is really the determining factor as far as how many meals you have. So, you know, my target right now these days is right around 300. So, you know, six meals for me, I've been doing it for so long, it's just automatic. It doesn't matter. So it's very easy math, 50 grams per meal on average. Some of them are 45, some are 55. So, you know, it varies and fluctuates a lot based on what I'm doing for the day. So I tend to eat the same stuff a lot of the times every day, but I do still log my foods so that I do have the freedom to, you know, replace something in and out. If I get surprised and the wife says, hey, we're going to go out for dinner tonight. Okay, cool. And, you know, I know how to play around with the macros and make that fit. So so the bodybuilding myth, just about meal timing and frequency. You know, people say it's important because, you know, it keeps your metabolism going. Your activity keeps your metabolism going. Food drives that to some extent as well. But mostly the biggest reason behind that is just, you know, make sure that you can hit the targets, hit them comfortably and hit them in, you know, productive increments so that you're not cramming in, you know, 1200 calories per meal three times a day to hit your 3600 calorie mark. It's just, you know, it's going to be less comfortable than if you divvy that up into six meals that are about 600 calories. So worth considering. So, we have two main topics to address today. The first one, talks about assessing your progress. And the second one is going to come down to supplementation. And on the supplementation side of things, we're going to cover everything. So just hit broad strokes as far as what to look for, what to avoid, that kind of stuff. So assessing progress. The first thing that we need to do is define what the goal is so that we know how to measure and what we're looking for. So, you know, if you're trying to grow, if you're in a growth phase, you're trying to build muscle, you might assess things one way, and if, or at least, you know, take your assessments, but look at them with an eye skewed towards that goal. And then if you are going to try and cut weight, cut fat, you know, you're going to look at things a little bit differently there as well. And you might look at some different metrics. So, ultimately the biggest thing that trips people up is when they rely on a single metric to assess their progress. So if they only look at photos, photos are probably one of the most useful metrics. But if you only look at photos, you're relying on something. I mean, first of all, you may be a terrible photographer. You may be making all kinds of changes, but your photos are so shitty, you can't see them. Or you may look at yourself, as most of us do, with such skewed vision that you may be making all kinds of progress, but you just don't see it, because you don't look at yourself with very fair eyes. Entirely possible. So photos are useful, but again, we want to have some other things to back those up. Another one would be scale numbers. Now, I know I've worked with a lot of people, and I hear a lot of people say, don't use the scale to judge your progress. And I would change that to say, don't use the scale exclusively to judge your progress. But should you use it? I mean, you know, it causes problems for some people. It really does. I'm not going to lie. I mean, some people just can't handle it. They start to rely on that number. They start to expect to see a certain thing. And if they don't, then it just destroys their life and their entire sense of self-worth. So I would say if that's you, I don't know. I mean, bodybuilding's tough. And having a good gauge on where you're at and being able to assess those metrics is good. So work on your acceptance of that as a data point. I think that would be useful. Try and look at it objectively. It's telling you something. It's not telling you anything about your character. It's not telling anything about your body composition. It's telling you exclusively about your relationship to your mass and the Earth's gravity. That's all there is to it. So But it is a really useful number. So I've written about this a lot on my website. If you go back, there's a blog post. I think it's titled Weight Tracking and Expectations. So for me, as you know, I am a huge data guy. I like getting as many data points on certain things as we possibly can. I track that stuff for myself. So I have a spreadsheet where I track my weights. I do it pretty much daily. Not that I'm going to let that influence my decisions, but just I want to know, like, hey, yeah, actually, over the past 3 months, I have gained 10 pounds or something like that. You know, I'm not necessarily looking at the day-to-day numbers, but it helps me identify trends. So, but on that blog post, I talked about the kind of things that influence the changes in those numbers that you might see from day to day. And if you do track weights daily, what you're really looking at from one day to the next to the next to the next over those really short intervals would be mostly fluctuations in water retention and fluctuations in solid waste retention. So like if you're constipated, for example. Other than that, you know, you're not going to lose enough body fat in a day for it to register on the scale. You're also not going to gain enough body fat in a day for it to register on the scale. Same with muscle. Gains and losses don't get measured that quickly. So you've got to know what you're looking at. You've got to be able to identify, you know, if you gain, you know, 2 pounds on the scale when you were on plan the day before, you know, you didn't get 2 pounds fatter. So you've got to be able to kind of talk yourself through that and do, you know, duh, come on. You know, what is it? You're holding some water. Now think about why. You know, was your water intake off? Did you not sweat as much as you normally did the day before? Did you have a lot of extra sodium? You know, did you go out for Chinese food and make it fit in your macros somehow? You know, those are all things that could easily contribute to a 2 pound gain in water. Are you constipated? Did you not poop the previous day? That could certainly contribute to it also. So a lot of factors that go into that. But if you track that daily over a long enough time, you do start to develop trends. And if you're trying to gain muscle, if you're trying to lose fat, you combine that with then looking at the progress pictures, then you can really start to get a better idea of, oh, okay, this is working. Or, oh my God, I'm getting fat. I need to stop this. Another metric, and this is one that's a little bit more qualitative than quantitative, but your gym output. So I'm not looking at necessarily the numbers and how much weight you're pushing on lifts, but how do you feel about your workouts? How do you feel about the quality of your workouts? You know, are you getting quality pumps? Are you pushing really hard on fatigue to create muscular fatigue by the end of the workouts? When I have check-ins with my clients every week, those are all questions that I ask them regularly. And I fear that some of them slip into a habit of always giving me the same answer. So if you're listening to this, you know, just know that I watch those things and I track those answers from week to week. So don't cut and paste. The cut and paste police are coming to get you. But just tracking that output and making sure that, you know, you're still on point with the workouts, you haven't noticed a significant dip in effort or focus or intensity or anything like that. It's another metric to track. The next one that I have on my list here, it's a deviation list, and then we could kind of put a slash there and say a self-assessment of your adherence to the plan. So one of the things that I track on my spreadsheet, I have a column for deviations. You know, so, well, actually I used to, now I just have a column for my macros. So for me, a deviation is just if I'm off on my macros, and if God forbid there's something untracked, that goes in there as well. So, I don't want that to happen, but I know it's going to eventually. So I will put that in a deviations column just so that I know, and I can look at it, and then I can kind of zoom back and pull my vision out a little bit and look at the numbers and say, okay, things are going, you know, the scale is doing this. If I compare, you know, my photos from this week versus last week, let's look at the scale numbers over the course of that. And then they're pretty much steady. Maybe it's trending one way or the other. And then I can look at my macros and, you know, because I've made my notes objectively without trying to sugarcoat them for myself or my coach, whoever I'm reporting to. I can say, okay, well, you know, I was consistently on my macros. I hit all my cardio as well because I'm logging that too. So whatever cardio I've set for myself, I hit that. Or, you know, okay, my weight isn't really moving the direction I want to. Well, let's look at why. And it could be, oh, well, I'm not really hitting my cardio. Or I had a note here, you know, cardio intensity was really low these 2 days. I just couldn't get up for it. Or, you know, I had extra carbs these days and I noted that. Or I didn't track when I went to the movies and had a bunch of popcorn there. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, those are all things that we kind of need to clean up. Or we could say, well, actually, no, it's just according to plan. You know, I followed everything and I'm still not seeing the kind of progress that I want, in which case there's a decision to make. Do you keep things as they are and just give your body a little bit more time, because sometimes that's exactly what it needs? Or do you need to make look at making an adjustment in your plan? So it's entirely possible that either one of those things are valid. Other measurements. We talked about the scale, which is a measurement. Other measurements, I get asked by clients a lot, especially when they're first starting out, if I want to get circumference measurements or pinch tests or anything like that. I say no. And the reason for that is if I can't take the measurement myself, I don't trust it, because there is skill involved in taking those measurements. I've seen it happen a lot. Years past, I've been guilty of this, where, I'll take somebody because, the gym wanted me to do this. So I'd take a tape measure around somebody's waist and be like, okay, let's look at what we got. Okay, it was 27 last week. It's 27 this week. Well, let me just pull it a little bit tighter here. Oh, look, it's 26 3/4. I mean, you have no idea how easy it is to do that. And you could do it with that, not even deliberately. So I don't trust those numbers. I don't trust circumference measurements. If you're taking them cold, if you're taking them pumped and you're trying to measure biceps, it really depends on the quality of your workout and your overall focus. It's dicey. It's dicey. And I don't trust those. And especially caliper measurements, those are really tricky. And there is an exception to that. And that's one thing that I want to talk about here. You can do a single site pinch test. And so you can just use your fingers, although that's not terribly accurate. You can just, pick your trouble spot, someplace where you carry some fat. Just give yourself a little informal pinch test and you can kind of see, how does that feel? Does that feel like that skin fold is thicker than you last remember it? A little leaner than you last remember it? Getting a pair of really cheap ass calipers. I think there's some from bodybuilding.com that you can order that are like $4, or you can specify them as a freebie on an order. They're cheap, they're lame, but they work for this. So think about, where your trouble spot is. I mean, for a lot of guys, if you just do a quick and easy pinch just off to the side of the belly button, the abdominal area, that's an easy way to do it. Depends on how much fat you carry. If you're really lean, you may be able to grab some other areas and see. That's one that would work for a lot of people, though. So just a single site pinch test, another thing to track. And, that measurement is in millimeters, so you can put that on a spreadsheet and track that along with everything else, too. I wouldn't obsess about that. I'd hit that once a week. And that's really going to reinforce what you're seeing from the other stuff, most likely. So if you're seeing the scale go down, you're probably going to see that number go down as well. So body fat percentage, skip it completely. Do not worry about that. That is the one measurement I get asked for the most. People say, either what body fat percentage am I, or I got tested and I'm 13.68% body fat. I'm like, great. Again, this goes to what we talked about before as far as implying accuracy that just isn't there. Unless you get a DEXA scan, which you've typically got to pay for a lot, it's just not worth it. There's too much, there's a lot of skill involved in taking correct measurements, and there is too much inaccuracy built into the calculations. So basically, let's talk about, first of all, the most common options are skinfold caliper test, a bioimpedance test, or a bod pod is becoming more and more reliable. The bod pod, that's okay. I think it's kind of a hassle. And I've seen people who come out of that and they're like, I'm 4.7%. I'm like, my eyeballs can tell you you're more like 8%. So, I don't put a lot of stock in that, but of all of the options, it's probably the least evil. Bioimpedance relies so much on your hydration state as to be almost worthless. And if you look at the manual, and that's the kind of thing where, you step on your scale barefoot or you hold onto a handle, something that has little, really low voltage electrodes on it, and you hold onto that thing after plugging in like your height and weight. And it will tell you your body fat percentage, your water percentage, muscle percentage, et cetera, all that crap. It depends on your hydration status so much. And if you look at the manual for those devices, it'll tell you that it's accurate to plus or minus 3%, usually, maybe 2%, which means it'll say you're 21.4%, which means somewhere between 19.4 and 23.4, which I could tell you just by looking at you. So, the other thing with skinfold calipers, really tricky because it's a difficult skill to master. They don't teach you that skill in personal training school. if you look in pretty much any any book that I've ever seen, any text that accompanies a certification course, they don't talk about that. I mean, ACSM certainly didn't. AFPA certainly didn't. So there is skill involved in taking those measurements. And if I'm not taking them, then I really don't trust them. But, you know, some random dude that I don't know taking skin fold calipers on my client or my client themselves taking them, I don't know if they're doing it correctly. And then we're taking those numbers. I mean, first of all, if you're going to do that, just send me those numbers, okay? Because I don't care what body fat percentage comes from those. I want to know what those numbers are. I want to know what the skin fold millimeter readings are on your tricep, on your chest, on your subscapular, on your abdominal, because those are the numbers we want to track and see. What you would do if you plug those into a calculator or something to get a body fat percentage, the way it works, if you break down the formulas and you actually go and look at how they work, is it takes those skin fold measurements and it plugs them into a big, long formula that estimates your body density. And then it takes that body density estimate and it plugs that into another big long formula that then estimates your body fat percentage. So the body fat percentage that you end up with, and it's going to be like, you know, 13.74%, seems really accurate. It's an estimate of an estimate of a potentially very unreliable measurement. So I put no stock in that whatsoever. And also, the other big thing is it doesn't matter. The reason why most people want that is because they've been told by somebody that they need to be 8% body fat to step on stage. Which, first of all, no, you don't. Nobody's going to hold up calipers and test you before they let you on stage. So, but I know what you mean. I mean, you want to be at a certain level of conditioning before you step up on stage. Okay, I get that. But you've got to pass the eyeball test. It doesn't matter what the number is. You've got to look the part. So the number itself is irrelevant. And we've got enough other metrics. That one is so unreliable, we can just skip it and rely on everything else. Making sure that you have appropriate intervals set up for when you measure these things is helpful also. If you are, you know, don't take photos daily, for example. First of all, it's a pain in the ass. It takes a lot of time. Do it weekly. A scale number, you know, it's quick and easy. It takes about 4 seconds to step on the scale and get a number. Great. Log that on a spreadsheet. You're done. You can absolutely do that daily. Everything else, I would kind of make a little bit more weekly. Like, I track my macros, any deviations that I have. I track those on a daily basis. I put those on my spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet that I keep open on my computer all the time anyway. If you're watching on Facebook, you can see as my eyes track from monitor to monitor to try and see where that is. Here it is. I posted on Instagram a screenshot of this before, and it's the date, my weigh-in number, any macro, what I have is uncertainties or omissions. Like, if I have to make a really rough estimate, like, I don't know exactly what my macros were here, but I guessed. Or if I just left something off completely, what the precise macros were, protein, carbs, fat, and then there's a calculated cell where it plugs in the calories from that. And then I just have a note for what lifting session I hit, because I lose track of where I'm in the split all the time because I'm a giant idiot and I can't remember what I worked out yesterday. And then also, if I'm doing interval cardio or steady state cardio, what session, like one of one, two of three, whatever. And then I have little lines going through it every 7 days just to mark off the weeks. So make sure that you're measuring things at appropriate intervals. And then also make sure that you've got realistic goals. Like, if your goal is to lose 4 pounds a week, you might be able to do that once or twice, but that's not sustainable. Unless you're 600 pounds, in which case you could probably stand to lose 4 pounds a week for a few consecutive weeks. Otherwise, you know, the less fat you have to lose, the harder it is to lose it. So the more you need to adjust your expectations into a tighter and tighter range. So, if you are 130 pounds and you know your stage weight is about 118 and you're giving yourself 16 weeks to get there, do the math and don't expect to drop a pound and a half, 2 pounds a week. I mean, that's basic math. That's very obvious. So, but it's worth stating nonetheless. So, that's pretty much what it comes down to when we're talking about assessing progress. So I do get questions from, potential clients a lot of the time. How do you assess progress? What kind of things are we going to be doing? There you go. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. All right. If you're watching on Facebook, you might see that there is a Fender Strat behind me here. That is not there just to make me look cool. It is there to remind me that I can't play it. I've had that guitar since 1996. And if I were to pick it up and play it right now, which I'm not going to, you would think that I probably had it for about a week. I'm bad. I'm really bad. It's there because I figure its presence there would encourage me to pick it up more often and play it in during my work day when I've got a few minutes here and there. That has not worked. So, anyway, that's why that thing is behind me over there. Let's talk about supplements now. Topic two on the agenda for today. So these fall into a few different categories. So we're going to start with the legitimate supplements and then work our way to the more questionable supplements. So the first thing is, you know, over-the-counter, stuff that you can get from bodybuilding.com, stuff that you can go to Vitamin Shop and order, GNC, anything like that. The big thing to remember here is as a coach, I insist upon, not that I've been offered, but I do not maintain any affiliations with supplement companies. And the reason for that is the supplement industry, by and large, is a massive scam. It is designed to take your money and give you very little in return. Now, there are exceptions to that. There are some products that are worth it. But again, these are products that are pretty much irrelevant of brand. There are certain things that are worth it. And then, you know, you can find a quality product in that category from a lot of different companies. So the typical recommendation that I give everybody is when it comes to supplements, go cheap, go generic, because most of the stuff that I recommend are just raw compounds. They're not blends or anything like that. I don't like to rely on proprietary blends where, you know, you can see all the stuff that's in it, but not the amounts of stuff that's in it, just because I like to know. And so when I look at like a pre-workout product, for example, I will avoid the ones that don't have listed out, you know, how much arginine is in here, how much beta alanine is in here. If they hide it under that proprietary blend mask, I'm not gonna go there, because I would rather just buy the raw components and build my own pre-workout if that's the case. So there's a few different categories. You know, there's overall general health, things that are good for you, whether you're doing bodybuilding or not. And I take a lot of those things. I mean, not a lot, a few. You know, something like CoQ10 for heart health. Liver support is something that people commonly take. I do not. Essential fatty acids. I take evening primrose oil. That counts towards your macros as well. Typically about 1 gram per soft gel. I mean, you know, if it's not going to break the bank if you forget to log that, but I typically have about two of those in the morning. Things like baby aspirin, you know, just an 81 milligram baby aspirin. What else? I take oregano oil to help with digestion. I used to take a probiotic. I did not find that for the expense, because it is expensive to get a quality probiotic, I did not feel like it really did anything for me. So I do not take that. I do take oregano oil, though. Other things like, you know, I don't take a multivitamin because I get pretty much everything I need from food. And there's been a lot of studies done that multivitamins, you know, especially of late, they're of questionable value. I do take vitamin C, echinacea, things like that for immune system health specifically, just because I do not want to get sick. And if I can take two super cheap ass supplements daily to even give me a chance of warding off the next illness that's out there, or shortening it, or lessening the severity of the symptoms from it, you're damn right I'm going to do it, because I'm a giant baby and I don't want to get sick. So there you go. The other category, the other category of your legitimate over-the-counter supplements would be those that are performance-based. So, you know, I talked about pre-workout before. I am a pre-workout whore. I love a good pre-workout product. Part of it is just I like the taste. I like the caffeine kick. I know that the other stuff that's in there is beneficial as well. So, you know, like I mentioned, beta-alanine, arginine, creatine, possibly. You know, some of them have that, some don't. Some contain a little glutamine. Some contain... I should have wrote out the rest of my list. I'm drawing a blank. What's the other one, the big one? Whatever. It'll come to me and I'll blurt it out like I have Tourette's in about 30 seconds. So I do like a good quality pre-workout. The biggest place where you get your bang for the buck, though, is intra workout. So you get a bunch of water, 30 to 50 ounces, and you throw some stuff in there. That is where I put most everything that I take. So that's where things like the creatine and the glutamine go, the branched chain amino acids, maybe a little extra leucine in there, some L-carnitine, some carbohydrates, some high molecular weight carbohydrates, things like cyclic dextrin, Vitargo, Carbolin, products like that. Maybe a little protein. So I've been experimenting lately with basically having my post-workout shake as I lift. And then I go and lift, and then I wait an hour and a half, and then I have kind of a second post-workout meal. So what that means is I put a good deal of carbs and a good deal of protein in there, and focusing on things that are, for protein, hydrolyzed, which means, partially digested, so it's easier for you to digest. It absorbs faster into the bloodstream because you want to get it in there while you're lifting, while you've put your body in this anabolic state where it's ready to absorb nutrients and ready to engage in protein synthesis, and it's going to use those carbs as well. And everything else, what you want to get is, if you've got the option to, get it micronized. So micronized creatine, micronized leucine, those are all things that they dissolve more finely in water. They also absorb faster into the bloodstream too. So intra workout is where you get a lot of bang for your buck as far as supplementation. And then post-workout, if you go with a more traditional post-workout, then you've got, whey protein, which I consider that food more than a supplement. Some people will say, I don't take any supplements. And then I'll say, okay, we'll have this protein shake. And they'll be like, well, that's a supplement. Like, no, it's not. It's food. Stop it. And that the post-workout may also be a place where you can get in some of those designer starches, some of those high molecular weight carbs, those commercial products, Vitargo, Carbolin, Glycofuse, Glycoject, Cytocarb, whatever. I've kind of soured on that one. It does not sit well with my stomach. But that's a good time to get some of that stuff in as well. Or you could go with the solid food approach, which is perfectly fine too. It's really more about what's convenient and what's most practical for you specifically. So that's pretty much it. When you go into Vitamin Shoppe, those are the things that I'm looking for. And I keep saying that because it's the one that's closest to my house. And I hate GNC because they're so damn expensive. And Vitamin Shoppe sends me rewards for free money. So I spend enough there apparently. Invariably, though, they always send me like, here's your $20 healthy reward certificate, and it's the day after I've been there, because they are rat bastards and they know that, and they're doing it just to antagonize me. I'm convinced of that. So beyond that, you've got your legitimate over-the-counter supplements. The next category, the next classification would be your gray area kind of stuff. So these are things like prohormones, SARMs, which is selective androgen receptor modulator. These are products that are a little different. They're a little bit more hardcore, I guess you could say. They are of possibly questionable legality. But like prohormones, you can buy those typically in a GNC or a Vitamin Shoppe or a Complete Nutrition. And I believe the last I checked on this is the government, the FDA, will regulate specific pro-hormones. Like, okay, this compound, no, you can't sell that. And then they reformulate it and they put it out with a different formulation. And then there you go. So the supplement company is always staying on top of government regulations, just one step ahead. So they're always going to be available, probably, until there's a blanket ban put on them, which, who knows if that'll happen. So are pro-hormones effective? Yes. But they are all taken orally through the mouth as pills, and they all carry some degree of liver toxicity with them. So they can range from, mild to like, man, that stuff is really not good for your liver. So it kind of runs the gamut. I think about Complete Nutrition because I know that, when I've gone in there in the past, they really push this stuff in there. And the other places, they kind of stick it in a back shelf somewhere and they're like, yeah, if you want that stuff, go over there. Complete Nutrition, you walk in, you're like, I want to put on some muscle. And they're like, pro hormones right over here on our center display. I don't know if they're still like that, but they were a few years back. But they put that together and they put it in with like, okay, well, you take that, and then also here's your estrogen support, and here's your post-cycle therapy, and here's your liver support, and we're going to sell you this box of four pills, and it's going to be like $300. And you're like, holy crap, I just thought I needed the one thing that was like $60. And they're like, no, you need all the other stuff too. And they're right. You do. So if you're going to do something like that, you need to make sure that you are set up to come out of that cycle on the other side of it in good health. Because that stuff is kind of harsh, and you do need to take care of your body. The other thing is you'll notice that they are effective. You typically run those things for like 4 to 6 weeks usually. And then you're like, damn, that's it. Okay, fine. And then you already start thinking about running it again, which is a bad move. So you need to, you know, you run that stuff and then you've got to come off. You've got to let your body recover. You've got to go through the post-cycle thing. You should probably not hop right back on. So they can be kind of dangerous that way. So the liver toxicity is the big thing. The other thing is you can get a lot of things as research chemicals. So these would be SARMs. These would be things like, you know, you could get clenbuterol, T3, et cetera. You can buy these online as research chemicals. So, you know, it comes with a big disclaimer, not for human consumption, with very big sarcastic finger quotes there, because they know full well that nobody is doing research on this. Like, nobody is putting on their lab coat and their safety glasses and mixing this stuff up in graduated cylinders and then figuring out what concoction they're going to mix up. No. I mean, they're taking this stuff. They know that. So they sell it as a research chemical because they can do so legally as long as they put a disclaimer on there, not for human consumption, blah, blah, blah. So that's another thing. So those are things, I mean, you can find, there's so many products that are available that way. You know, certain peptides, SARMs, ancillaries for steroid cycle support, other things like clenbuterol, like T3. I mean, there's all kinds of things available that are that you can get through that avenue. So the other category of supplementation that leaves us with then is the one that is certainly not a gray area, and that would actually be steroids. So without a prescription, this stuff is not legal. And so if it's not legal, you're not buying it through a pharmacy. You're buying it off the black market from some guy who's probably mixed it up in his living room. And so fingers crossed, man, I hope this is what it says it is, and I hope there isn't any crap in here. Now, most of the guys that are doing this understand that if they sell you poison, that they will probably not get a lot of return business. So they tend to want to put out a quality product. And, you know, by and large, most of the ones that have been around for longer than a month do that. So the problem with this, you know, obviously the legality of it is one thing. And the other thing is understanding the risks associated with it. So there are the benefits, which are clear. You know, I mean, there are so many different compounds out there. There are so many different ways that you could stack them, cycle them, so many ways to run it. The goal, though, is always the same. I mean, all steroids are going to help you build muscle. There's no such thing as a cutting steroid. So like, if you were like, I want to take something that's going to help me get lean, it's not that, you know, that's going to help you build muscle. It's going to raise your metabolism a little bit. It's going to mean that you can, you know, if you eat less, you will probably lean out, but it's a secondary effect. You know, it's not helping you do that directly. So understanding what it does and then understanding the risks. You know, most of the risks associated with steroids fall into the category of misuse or abuse. People that don't understand how to use it correctly, they subscribe to the theory that more is more, and I might be doing this for the first time, but damn it, I'm going to start it off with a bang. Or they don't finish their cycle correctly. Like, they just come off and then boom, they go off completely and they don't take anything. They don't do any post-cycle therapy support. They do nothing like that. They're setting themselves up for a really bad time if that's the case. So those are the biggest hazards. And of course, if you're injecting stuff, there's always the chance of an infection. And what do you do if you get that? I'd say if you're not an idiot, the chance is pretty low, but still it's a possibility. It's out there. So understanding the risks. So, you know, the risks of really fucking up your hormones, potentially, if you don't do it right. The risks of ending up in jail, potentially, paying giant fines and legal fees. The risk of possibly getting an infection, or the benefits, you know, on the other side of the equation, you build more muscle, you improve your conditioning. So, people ask me, very, very frequently, you know, should I do this? You know, I've been thinking about it. What do you think? And my answer is always pretty much just what I said. You know, here are the facts, know them, make a decision for yourself. There are a lot of coaches out there, and I hear this a lot, who say, oh, okay, you're doing competition prep. Great. Here's your cycle. Here's what I need you to go get. Go run this stuff. And there's never even any discussion as far as like, well, what if I don't want to do that? It's like, well, you're competing. Of course you want to do that. I'm telling you to. Now go get your Anavar, go get your Clan, go get your T3, and go about your business. And it's like, I mean, you can't do that. I mean, that's just so irresponsible. You know, if somebody tells me, you know, I've been a natural all my life, I want to start taking some stuff because, you know, I just, for whatever reason, I want to. Like, great. Here are some websites to go look at, go read, learn some stuff, read a lot about it. I'm going to tell you some stuff, but I don't want you to rely just on what I tell you. So you've got to be willing to put in some work and put in some research on your own as well, because I need you to be informed so that you can make a good decision for yourself and be responsible about it. So it's a big step. You know, as soon as you take something like that, you've pretty much disqualified yourself from any natural competition. So it's something that you've got to be comfortable with. So just understanding that, you know, you can put that along with one of the risks if you want, but you've got to know what you're getting into. So, and then of course, if you take something like that, especially for a guy, you've really got to set yourself up with proper post-cycle therapy. Women, typically not. You're taking different compounds. Your natural hormonal production is not impacted the way that a guy's is, because while you do have natural testosterone production, if it shuts down because you're supplementing with something that that replaces that, you know, your testosterone production getting shut down does not have the impact that it does if a guy's get shut down. And so that's the concern there. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it. There's your supplement primer. So to recap, you've got your over-the-counter supplements, which, you know, by and large are snake oil. I mean, if you walk into a supplement shop, you've probably got 80% of the stuff in there that is just garbage crap. And this is why I will never get an invite to be a an affiliate for a supplement company, probably. So, but I stand by it. You know, there's so little science backing up so many of these products. And to some degree, you know, I'm okay taking anecdotal evidence as a valid enough reason to take something. I've been doing this for long enough. I know when something's a placebo effect and when something's real. So, if I can feel an impact and a benefit from something, cool. That's enough for me to want to look deeper into it, maybe not make recommendations on it to a client, but at least talk about it, look into it a little bit. So, but most of the stuff out there that you can buy over the counter is crap. And then you've got the gray area stuff that is very effective, like pro hormones, et cetera, but carries some pretty high risks with it. And they're very easy to misuse or overuse. And then you've got the AAS category, anabolic androgenic steroids, which carry a lot of risks with them, a lot of potential for abuse and misuse, but also, you know, potentially great benefits as well. So everybody has to answer that question as far as what is worth it for them. What direction do they want to take their body? And just like, you know, when you invest in mutual funds or the stock market, you talk with your financial advisor, you know, what level of risk are you comfortable with? But in this case, it's your body. So, and you only get one of those. So if you invest your money and you're overly aggressive with your investment and you lose your money, you can make more and reinvest it. With your body, if you fuck it up, you only get that one. And so that's something that's worth considering. Now, you're not going to fuck it up to the point where you die, but you can, you know, you can do some harm if you're really stupid with it. If you're safe and moderate and, you know, you realize that the one thing that's good to know about supplements also, and the one thing that I didn't mention, is that all of this stuff is worthless if you don't have your training in order and if you don't have your diet in order. You know, I've worked with a handful of people who wanted to start on a steroid cycle and they can't follow a meal plan to save their life. I'm like, dude, get your shit together. You know, get on the meal plan first. Show me that you know how to work out. Show me that you can be consistent with this. Let's put on some muscle. Let's get a little closer to, you know, your natural genetic potential. Because the longer you wait before you start something like that, the more effective it's going to be for you. So, all stuff worth considering. So, as always, all I like to do is throw out the ideas and let people take it whatever way they will, absorb it any way they will, and hopefully, you know, it sparks you to do a little bit more research, ask some more questions, that kind of stuff. So that's all I got. That's all I got for this week. So I will be, let's see, next week. Next week is the 10th. Yeah, so I will be back next week. We'll have another episode next week. It may be a Thursday one. I'm not totally sure yet. I know that this time next week, I will be getting ready to go play a show with a band. So I might do this on Thursday, but we'll probably do the live broadcast again. So I hope you all stay tuned for that and come back, and I'll make sure to put up an announcement about it. So I appreciate everyone out there in Facebook land who is watching or was watching. Thank you for popping in. For everybody listening, either on the website, through iTunes, through Google Play, I appreciate it as always. Your feedback, questions, comments, topic suggestions, always considered. So once again, I am Darren. The website is 5starphysique.com, on Instagram at 5starfit, or facebook.com/5starphysique. Thank you everybody for listening. Have a fantastic weekend and train hard.